Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Leo in London.
I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We want people to know that autistic therapists exist and to broaden the conversation about neurodiversity. You're so welcome to join us, whoever you are and wherever in the world you are. We hope you'll find something of interest and connection here.
Hello, across the table.
Hello, across the table.
Here we are.
Do you want to explain what across the table means?
Well, that's right, because not everybody is on our Facebook.
Nearly everyone in the world is.
Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. So, We are in Carrick at my house, and Leo came to visit so that we could do some podding and hang out together. And so we are actually recording in the same space.
For the very first time.
For the very first time.
That's very exciting.
Is
it different for you?
To see you across the table as opposed to on a screen? Well, you're probably just about the same distance in terms of how I can see your face.
That's true.
And you're still making us have two mics. Even though that doesn't make any sense to me because we're in the same space. But yes, we have two mics, so we still have to do claps and have separate recorders. So does it make any difference? I don't know. Does it make a difference to you?
Yes, it does. It feels like a calmer energy.
Does it?
Yeah, to me it does. But that's about being in an autistic space, i.e. your house.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Because I would like to think that we create a calm space together in our Zoom room.
That's very true, but that's for the period of time that we record, so it's maybe for an hour and a half.
Okay.
Whereas I've actually got to be here throughout the days and just be in that state the whole time, which is what it says in our intro, or our old intro. We're recording a new one today. I don't know if it's going to say it, but creating an autistic space and getting to know each other in it.
Okay, but we're creating that together. But it's really nice if you're saying that my home already has an autistic vibe.
Absolutely it does.
Yeah. That's really nice.
In the mundane, as well as, you know,
as well as
the profound. Well, but it is profound too, isn't it? To be able to wander about, to sleep and eat at whatever timetable happens to feel right.
Yes.
To be able to communicate without having to, not translate, that's too dramatic. Help me out, what am I trying to say?
Well, possibly the things that Lana and I do automatically.
Do you want to say your daughter and you?
You know, I think that there was maybe like an episode at Christmas whenever I just used names and she said it was okay.
Oh, okay.
I think that happened. But yeah, well, I think that probably there's things that Lana and I do that we have got into such a way of it that we don't even know that it's an autistic way of doing it because we don't have to explain or nobody else sees it.
Right.
So like the way that we eat and the way that we move around each other, so much of it has kind of just got so normal in how we do things that it's only when someone comes into it that it is you can notice the autistic
nature. Because, and that's what I notice.
Yes.
Because that is a unique experience. It's a unique space. I haven't enjoyed that before.
Yeah.
And the fact that it isn't weird for me or that I have to adjust at all to just being in this space, which is an autistic, which is 100% autistic space and home. That gives me an experience of something that I haven't experienced before.
Mm.
which is to be entirely and none of this is any shade on any other environment that I visit or live in or have lived in, but because I didn't know it existed, I didn't know that you could, I didn't know what being permanently unmasked 24 hours a day. And I don't even know if unmasked is the right word. Maybe it's just about being my true, authentic, autistic self.
Mm, that's lovely, though. That's really touching to hear you say that.
Well, it's true, isn't it? You know, it's.
And I guess it's been easy for me to help you here because I don't have to adapt the other way around. So I don't have to think, okay, is the way that I'm doing things going to be too weird? So then I don't have to adjust or try and get my daughter to adjust to be, quote unquote, polite or to sit at the table with you because I have a guest.
And it's such a joy or a relief or just a centering, calming experience not to have that pressure on me.
Yeah.
Not that I previously would have experienced it as pressure, but now I have this point of comparison where these things aren't necessary. And we can just, as you say, move around each other. That's such a lovely phrase. Because it isn't about, in a way that's going to sound very selfish, it isn't about thinking about other people.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And that's what I was going to say, that there's been times whenever I've, like, we have done that and we maybe haven't, like, properly, like, we haven't communicated or said, like, intentions of, I'm going to do this, then you're going to do this, because we're ADHD. We wander from one thing to another. And because the only sustainable way, actually, for me to have someone in my house for this length of time is to be able to go off into my own world and do things that kind of way. But then if you were someone else, and I've done this to you because I project onto you, of course I project onto anybody, then after a couple of hours I might go, oh, did it seem like I just ignored you? I don't know how long it's been. And because I've wandered to do this and that and the other thing. And then I've come back and I've forgotten that it's you because we're all just... we're habitually go, oh shit, like it's probably been 2 hours and I haven't checked if he's okay and he's a guest and you're supposed to do that.
You're supposed to.
And then I say that and you look at me like, you know, what? You know, because you're getting on with your kind of thing.
Always,
as well.
I always can.
And and I guess that I'm used to that with Lana because that's how we live. But then every so often it's like, if anybody else was here, I would probably not have done it so much because I would be holding myself in. But then even when I do it, I still have that automatic, I better apologise, that was probably rude. How long has it been? And, you know, check it in. And then I say, but normal people. And then you'll say, I'm not normal people.
That's it.
Yeah. But it's really like it still needs to be reinforced because I guess then I realise there is that habitual thing that even if I go into my norm, I'll get like suddenly shaken out of it and that part of me will go, oh, you're so rude, Shauna, or oh, what have you done? And oh, you're so weird, oh, you're so this, you know, and all of those things crash in. And then, of course, I just say it and then you're able to say, yeah, I'm okay. I'm not normal anyway.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, but that's interesting as well.
And I suppose that part of it comes up for you more than it does for me because I am consciously visiting somewhere and someone that I know to be autistic and an autistic space. So that's my expectations are set. Whereas you are used to having visitors of all neurotypes over a very, very long period of time and used to other behaviours that I'm not even expecting, you know. But I am, you know, I am joyfully surprised that I've come to a country I've never been to before in terms of within the United Kingdom. Country means country means country. It's three different things where we are. And to a town I've never been to before and a house I've never been to before with somebody I know very well, but haven't spent a great deal of time with
in person.
At all in person.
And that it was just instantly comfortable to be here, even with the unfamiliar. So I suppose ADHD was my, you know, was probably guiding me through and enjoying the unfamiliar and how do things work and where are things, maybe. I hadn't thought about this. But autistic me just instantly sensed that I was in a space where everything is okay. You can do and say anything. Nobody's going to misinterpret you. Or if there is a danger of that, they are going to ask for clarification rather than make an assumption. Again, this is no shade on other people. But if you've never experienced that as an autistic person before, it's incredibly profound. Just incredibly profound. It's like there's a description in Nick Hornby's book, High Fidelity, about like a tragic event that had lots of anxiety over and finally that event was over. And he described the sensation of your stomach relaxing and feeling the calm in your stomach like when you've just been sick. And that's a horrible, that's not a very...
Something's out and you suddenly feel like...
But you get everything that's been, you didn't even know was knotting up and getting tense. And that is the feeling that I have had constantly being in your space.
I love this. I love this. And, you know, and we've both slept really well. You know, which...
We've been getting so really good night's sleep. But also there's... So... We can talk about, you know, neurodivergent sleep patterns too. That when I say I had a really good night's sleep, I imagine for most people what they're going to imagine is that I went to bed at a time, I fairly quickly fell asleep, and then after a good 8 hours or maybe more of very good sleep, I woke up and everything was great. But that isn't, that is not what I naturally do. And and nor do you. I know that you will, you've talked about this before, I think, you know, that you'll wake up maybe for a, I don't know, you tell me an hour or two and do something.
Normally 2 hours. And my best way of sleeping is to like go to sleep and do like maybe 3 hours or something and then wake up in the early hours and everything is really quiet but have loads of energy. And like read or wander around and make a cup of tea and do whatever I want to do for a couple of hours and then go back over asleep for like another 3 hours. And that's my ideal. And I was doing that really consistently for a number of months. And I've been bemoaning the fact that I can't get back to that for the last, I don't know, 3 months or something for you? Two months? I don't know how long. And I've been like, really wanting back to that but couldn't get back to that and that's like coming back, you know, naturally. And it, I don't know, might be coincidence.
I definitely don't think it's coincidence, because this is what we've talked a lot about, that every time you and I connect, and that's mostly been on Zoom for 90% of the time that we've ever spent talking to each other or connecting, is self-regulating in a way, again, that I've not experienced before.
Co-regulating or self-regulating?
I'm just going to point out there's some background noise I'm probably not going to be able to get rid of, and this is the scratching about of Shauna's two beautiful, beautiful Burmese cats, Dusk and Phoebe. So if you hear the scratching around in the background, that's what that noise is. And they have also been part of the regulation. I think all pets are. I know that's definitely the case with my dogs at home.
Yes, and I know you're desperate to tell everybody how you won them over.
I would not dream of upsetting anybody.
Very short period of time. But we were talking too.
Yes, and I think
and they're part of
pet animals just, almost always are, aren't they?
They just live in a very flexible autistic way, and we roll with that as well. Sorry, where were we?
We were regulating each other and wondering about self-regulation, but actually it is co. Of course it is, because we do it for each other. With and when I say do it for each other, that makes it sound like a conscious act. It isn't. It's just the presence. Even virtual, we know that that absolutely happens. That I can describe it, I can try and describe it, and I've really been struggling to describe this to people around me for a while now, what that means, because it it is very difficult to give a practical example, because I can be, of course, I can be relaxed and happy and content at home or most places, unless it's a horribly stressful situation for some reason. But there's, you know, what is that extra thing? What is that? It partly feels somehow telepathic, but it's more than that, because it's bodily. It's I'm struggling not to use the word spiritual in some way. Energetic. There's something about the energy.
Energetic, probably.
That just, it's it's like, okay, here's a thing. I won't keep this probably, because this is going to be way too difficult. Anyway, noise-cancelling headphones, right? The way they work is that you've got a sound wave of the noise around you. And in a noise-cancelling headphone, I promise this is relevant. In a noise-cancelling headphone, there are also microphones that pick up the sound around you. So they pick up the same sound waves that exist outside that you would otherwise hear. And it just shifts them slightly so that they're opposite to each other.
Okay.
The peaks of one are the troughs of the other, etc. And that cancels
that
out
cancels
noise.
Each other. Yeah.
And I feel there's something about the energy when me and you, and I would say my autistic clients, just me being in that presence of autistic energy that matches mine, cancels out high feeling, whether that's anxiety or, I mean, I can get excited when I'm having stimulating conversations. That's probably more ADHD again coming into play to help me enjoy that. Did that make any kind of sense to you? And I wonder what your experience, how you might describe.
Well, I'm always interested whenever you give me tech definitions, because I don't understand how those things work. So that's interesting, how that works. And I can see that we probably do that. And even whenever one of us does become anxious, which has happened, but we can perceive it immediately. There's probably been a few examples, but when I'm like in the middle of things, and then if you like ask me something and there's something crosses my face, which is like I can't answer that, I can't switch to that train of thought, but I don't even need to like explain that, because you already know that I'm on a certain train and I can't jump onto that train. But instead of like waiting and trying to get me to jump onto that train, you'll just like wait or say, yeah, it's okay, I get it. And then, you know, but I guess unless you had actually got an inside out experience of what it's like when someone sort of comes in front of you with another thing to talk about whenever you're already in the middle of something, if you didn't know what that was like, then you wouldn't have the instant understanding of what it's like when I would experience it. And then you wouldn't be able to like not take offense, or not just wait, not just have to be patient. The cats are doing zoomies.
They are, yes.
So they're running through chasing each other. Then that would be harder. And then I would also kind of be like, oh, no, I didn't mean to offend you. Like, I am here. But I didn't have to do that, because I just would know that you would know that I was just on a certain train and needed and that, to stay on that
so that
train.
Then starts to feel, or you could be perceived as some kind of magic, some kind of telepathy or some kind. But it is a matching energy, but it's also it's a correct projection. I know how I might be in a situation like that, and therefore I can read it in you and address it, and vice versa. But all of that without effort. It's
without
instinctual
effort.
It's not an
offense. No offense on your side.
There never is
no like apology on my side.
No, or if there is, if there's some kind of misunderstanding because I might say something quite clumsily, then you will tell me how you've received that. I'll report back on what the intention was, or maybe a reframing or some extra explanation, and it's done.
Yeah, and I think there's hand signs as well. This is what I noticed as
Where
have you not noticed that?
I don't know. Tell me what you're thinking.
if we're talking about a situation like that, which we obviously never encountered online because it doesn't happen because
you've only got head and shoulders.
We've only got head and shoulders, but yeah. I could still, like, I move my hands a lot whenever we're talking.
That's true, actually.
But it's not like one of us is going to interrupt the other because we know we're calling and we know that we're on with each other. But I think that there's sometimes whenever, like, I'm doing something and if you're there, and I'll do this with my hands.
Which is to kind of put them up as if somebody said, stick them up.
Maybe. Well, but my hands are like facing each other.
Oh, okay. So kind of shoulder height.
Okay. It's not like pushing you away, but it's like something, it's almost like I'm putting a boundary around.
You're holding a shape in your
Holding a square right in front, like almost like I want to stay in this attention tunnel.
Oh, yes.
And I've never said that, obviously, I'm only saying that to you now, but intuitively, I would imagine that you've seen me do that.
Probably.
Maybe just like that, like not up, not anything dramatic.
No, now you're right. Now you say that. Now I see you doing that in front of me as a demonstration and you're describing what it is. It's instantly familiar.
Yeah.
I definitely hadn't consciously noticed that you do that. But there you go. There's that kind of instinctual, energetic understanding that you are communicating something to me, which I absolutely got, but totally out of awareness.
Yeah. And unless we're in the same space, then you're never going to see that because you're never going to be person to me because it's a scheduled call
and
that we're
not
having
in the same room.
And we're not or coming in and out of the same space.
Yeah.
But it's like what I just did there, like to some people, that could seem really abrupt and really like, and plus if that person kept on persisting, it might get more intense and almost be like that stereotype of an autistic closing their ears.
Clutching their own head. And yes.
But it's only a movement. It's a gesture and then it's gone.
Yes.
And I think that I've probably done that.
All
and
right.
I imagine I do that with my daughter and she gets it and that's something that's well established.
Yes.
But I'm just thinking I probably do that. And that's part of the communication of I'm in. And I've never used that. We haven't talked about this until now.
No, never.
But like, it's making sense to me as being like an attention tunnel and like some kind of a...
intention or attention.
Attention tunnel, monotropism, you
know?
Yes,
exactly.
I'm in this tunnel. I want to stay in
and
this
tunnel.
And I
need to tunnel. Stay in, need to stay
need
in.
Need to stay in this tunnel. Mm-hmm. But it's not like... It's also not offensive. It's just like literally just a hand up, hand down. And then somehow it's okay. But you said about... How would I see it? Because you have that tech understanding of the noise cancelling. I think it's nervous system. I think we have a different nervous system than non-autistic people. And so we can perceive the frequency of each other's nervous system. And when we're in a safe, calm, connected ventral space, like polyvagal theory, bringing those words in, then that is at a certain frequency and that's different. Like, you know, brain sound waves would show that that's different for autistic people, you know, and when we're in a heightened state, like sympathetic activation, that's different for us than for non-autistic people. So therefore, we can tune, like, we, you know, people, when they're around each other, pick up the frequencies of each other's nervous system. And I guess if it's different neurotypes, that's actually harder because the frequency of one might be what is sympathetic high activation for a certain neurotype, but it's actually just level activation for another neurotype. Yes. Something that might seem low, dorsal, disappear, might actually be quite normal for some people, but for another neurotype that would be a concern and that would be like, oh, I need to help them out of that, they're too low, they're too
you've done a lot more work with and have a much deeper understanding of polyvagal theory than I do, but the little bit that I've done and read has always resonated with me. And I think you describing how that works in real life between neurokin is very beautiful, very resonant. And for anybody who's just listened to the last 5 minutes and not quite got that, I just recommend doing a little Google just on the base. Lovely. So Shauna will give you some resources in the show notes for this episode.
Because that's very varied out there.
It kind of sounds a little bit magical and wacky if you've never heard any, when you start talking about people tuning into each other's frequencies. But this is very nice, nervous system-based science that also just does have a magical element to it when you experience it.
Yeah.
And for those people who might find it... I mean, these are all different versions of the double empathy problem, really, and we're talking about one side of it, which is our neurokin to neurokin, autistic to autistic part. And it's one explanation of it that's, for me, a little bit easier to get my head around and certainly to relate to. It's definite, whatever model we use to look at it from whatever angle, this is what I think I've been trying to communicate throughout the time we've been recording today, is I've not experienced it before. And the reality of it is just so incredibly. Be the authentic autistic me, not only though to be it, but to realise that it exists.
It's validated.
That is what I haven't I've never experienced it before. How do you know? How do you know until you experience it? And then when you do, that's who you want to be.
Yeah.
We have cats running about earlier. There are workmen out in Shauna's backyard, depending on where you're from, doing a lovely job on a patio area, and they are cutting up stone. This may be keepable with that explanation. And I'll try and filter out as much as I can. If not, we will come back and maybe re-record little bits of this.
So, sorry, I got distracted with that and felt the need to over-explain what was going on. We could have done that after. So what you said whenever I went over the top of you speaking was you said something about that you realise that you need.
To be the person that I am in this space for as much of the time as possible, which, of course, it's not totally possible in the real world. We do have to adapt, and we can consciously mask as a social skill, and that's useful. Or even just all humans are obviously different people to different people. We do that adaptation anyway.
But
what I was saying is the experience that I have in this space, and to a lesser degree because it's more constrained with the has it just exposed to me the existence of that authentic self. And I can't go, that needs to be lived and experienced. Bless you to the workmen outside.
Sneezing. And I have so much concern for this man because he's really not well.
He shouldn't be out there in the first place. He's not wearing a mask. They're grinding stone slabs.
Yeah.
Okay. There's our distraction. But yes, it's a space that I need to,
experience
as much as possible elsewhere. Now that I know that it can exist and that I can be that version of myself.
And you probably do create it in what you facilitate within your practice with your clients. I think we should go back, because you referred to the double empathy problem and didn't define. So double empathy problem. Well, you want to do it, you want me to do it?
Well, the very simplistic understanding and explanation I have is that the stereotype of an autistic person is that we don't do empathy, that we can't read people, we can't match them, we don't fit. So we are very cold and kind of mercenary and direct and rude.
Oh, yes, that's us.
That's definitely you, isn't it? And the double empathy problem basically explains that a neurotypical person empathizes with a neurotypical person and they can communicate freely and with understanding. So can we. That's one of the revelations. An autistic person and an autistic person, we absolutely can show empathy, understand each other and communicate. The problem is cross-neurotype communication.
Yes.
That's where the empathy might fall down. And it's not because either is unempathic or not a nice person. It's because we have such different frames of references in how we think and put our thoughts and communications together.
Yeah.
Doesn't eliminate the double empathy problem, but it really can dial it right down, because that's all you need is the and that's what empathy is, that's isn't it? It's being able to put yourself in the shoes of the other. And if I can put myself in the shoes of the neurotypical other and understand that they are experiencing a very different frame of reference for life in total than I am, I can take that into account in our communications, and most importantly, I would say vice versa, the other way around. That's harder, because most people don't have the exposure to autistic people as we have to neurotypical people.
Well, yes, but and also the dominant majority never feel the need to understand the minority in the same way. Mm. The minority always have to learn how to code switch and how to adapt. So actually many, many, many autistic people have very advanced empathy, because we've always had to try and understand the neurotypical people around us, whereas that would not be so important for neurotypical people to do with autistic people, especially if there's a narrative around that says, well, they're, you know, like somehow inferior in terms of their emotional capacity and that kind of thing. Anyhow, we should credit. So there was a kind of seminal paper written about all of this by Damien Milton. So we can put the link in the show notes along with that. And maybe some nice memes on the Facebook page or something to illustrate double empathy. Because it's really, once you get your head around that, it's really, really, really changes things. And if non-autistic people can get their heads around that, it can really change how they see us and how they see the communication that actually is two-way. And that just as we have to try and fit into their world, you know, likewise, there is a, if we're living in an equal society, then there should be an interest and a curiosity to, you know, understand the way that our work.
I'm pausing just to absorb and to think, and then a higher energy part of me is wanting to move on, because I've got a couple of other things that we wanted to talk about, but that original part of me doesn't want to and isn't ready. Because I think what you just said there about if neurotypical people could get their heads around what double empathy problem is, that would be so helpful. One of our absolute purposes in talking together publicly like this is... You know, it's in the... So we're talking about recording new intros and outros for the podcast today.
Right,
and we might... hopefully we're going to have some time to work on that after this recording. So you may have heard a slightly different intro at the beginning of this episode. But originally what we were saying was co-creating an autistic space and getting to know each other within
this
it.
That's right.
And that's definitely bang on.
Yeah.
And today... And these few days that I've been here with you have literally been that. I have actually physically visited this this space and moved about within it in the ways that we were describing before. And so I'm not saying, you know, that's mission accomplished, on we go to the next thing, because that will be a lifetime's work of experiencing that and talking more about it. But... The expansion then is to turn more outward, perhaps.
I think you're right.
To engage with the world a little bit more in the ways that you were just describing. And I suppose we've begun that phase by opening up our Facebook to whoever wants to join us as a friend, and
we're still being careful.
Oh, we don't. Yes, of course. No, we don't. But people don't have to know that because
okay, but whenever
bots
you said
aren't listening,
we're
but
opening it up to everyone.
Well, anybody
kind
who
of on it's still like we are moderating.
It is moderated, of course. It is. Yes. No. Somebody coming in with nefarious intention is not going to
make it into our
community, but. What I mean is there has been quite an explosion in the last just couple of 3 weeks.
It was only set up. It wasn't set up very long ago.
No, it wasn't.
Like the last, did I not talk about it?
Yes, that's right. We did. So, two or three weeks.
It's been a bit mad.
And there are people joining us just to because they're curious about the name and they may never have heard us. All over the world. Over the world. And that's so exciting, so that we do have more and more opportunities to be a little bit more outward and talk a little bit more about things like the double empathy problem, why it's helpful, why it challenges some of the stereotypes that we live with.
Yeah.
And maybe that's enough. Maybe that's what I needed to just to turn that corner from us talking about us and our experiences. Not that I want to stop doing that.
No, but you've just clarified, because I feel like you feel that something needs done to the intro and outro at this stage, but wasn't really clear on what that would be. But I think it is about that, like, because we have kind of said, you know, you don't have to be autistic to join us, almost like we assume that everybody's mostly going to be autistic themselves if they're interested. But I guess now we're kind of saying, well, why? Mm. Why? Why would somebody who's not autistic...
That's it. You're nailing it there.
Of course we want that. And I guess maybe there was almost an assumption from us at the beginning of why would anybody who wasn't autistic want to join us? Like, if they do, then they're very welcome. But why would they be interested? But we're now kind of saying, well, why would they not be interested if we're being confident that there is a double empathy problem and that we want to... support non-autistic people to, like, we deserve to be heard, as opposed to, well, if you've got nothing better to do, you could join us, which is still a narrative that kind of must play somewhere in me, or I wouldn't have said that.
Of course. Of course.
Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook, at autisticlicense.com, or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. At this point, Leo likes me to spell the word license because we spell it in different ways in different parts of the world. We spell it L-I-C-E-N-C-E. We also have a thriving Facebook community. You can search for Autistic License Shauna and Leo on Facebook, or you can click on the link in the show notes.